Merci et bonjour. Je suis une conservatrice de la mode d'après 1900 au musée Victoria et Albert à Londres, où j'ai travaillé pour 10 ans. J'étais extrêmement honorée d'accepter cette invitation de parler à ce colloque. Malgré un an d'études au lycée français à San Francisco, il y a 20 ans que je parle français régulièrement, alors malheureusement, il faut que je parle en anglais aujourd'hui. I would like to thank the museum and the Institut National du Patrimoine for organizing this conference and for the fantastic exhibition of Vionnet, which all of my colleagues at the Victoria and Albert Museum have had the pleasure of seeing over the last few months. And I think that this conference has suggested so many interesting topics, and I'm looking forward to hearing all of the papers over the next 2 days. Along with the next speaker and with Betty Kirk, we are representing the non-French aspect of this conference. And I would like to point out that I'm here as an ambassador for the Vionnet, and I'm speaking about a number of projects that they have worked on. And so I would like to express my thanks to them and acknowledge their expertise. Today, I'm going to be discussing how conservators and curators at the Vionnet work together, how together we care for and display our examples of haute couture and other types of fashion. And I'm going to be covering in this talk four areas: storage, exhibitions, loans, and acquisitions. And within the acquisitions section, the last section of my talk, I'm going to present a case study of one of the Vionnet's most important recent acquisitions, and I hope that this will give you some insight into the things that we think about when acquiring an example of haute couture. I suspect that you will find some things in my talk that are in common with your institutions, and I hope that if there are areas of difference, you will let me know. I'd be interested to hear that. I've worked at the Vionnet for 10 years, and in that 10 years, the museum life has changed dramatically. When I started, we didn't often travel our major exhibitions, and now most of our exhibitions are expected to travel to many venues. During the same period, we've made great progress in our plans to renovate and redisplay all the major galleries in the museum. At the same time, we're expected to maintain our work on supporting loans to other institutions. Therefore, we're working to a much more ambitious program than 10 years ago. As a result, I think we all work harder, and I think this may be something in common with your work lives as well. Our textile conservation studio, in some ways, to cope with this work, they take on contractors or people we hire from outside the museum to do this extra conservation work, because the number of textile conservators and curators has not changed in the last 10 years. Also, today, when we undertake a major gallery renovation to change a part of the museum, we work in project teams composed of curators, technicians, and conservators. Each person has separate expertise, but it is complementary expertise. And I would like to quote one of my colleagues, textile conservator Frances Hartog, and I think her words explain this collaborative teamwork at the Vionnet. Frances said, "What I appreciate about the Vionnet is that I have never had a curator tell me that they know better." I'll be presenting one of Frances's important projects later on in this talk. Before I go further, I should describe our collection. The Vionnet is a British national museum with an international reputation. We are a museum of art and design with a focus on the decorative arts. The Vionnet has been collecting textile-related objects since its founding in 1852. However, the original motive for collecting was to promote design skills in order to support the British textile industry. And so the Vionnet didn't actually start collecting contemporary fashion, that is, fashion designed at the time of acquisition, until about the 1970s. The Vionnet contains over 104,000 items of dress and textiles, which range in date from the 5th century BCE to the present day. and this includes a wide variety of objects, European fashion and accessories, but also textiles such as carpets, lace, furnishing fabric, national costumes, sample books, and textiles from Asia, such as Chinese textiles and Indian chintz, as well as some textiles from Africa, North and South America. Today, my fashion curator colleagues and I aim to capture examples of leading design. That phrase, leading design, is very much what forms our collecting policy. In addition to haute couture, that includes a variety of objects, things like street style, high-end ready-to-wear, and mass fashion. And while a large portion of our collection of haute couture is French, we also collect the past designs and support the current practitioners of the couture and tailoring industries in Britain. French haute couture, British couture, and Savile Row tailoring represent the pinnacle of craftsmanship within the fashion industry. Affordable to few, but aspired to by many, the quality, technical brilliance, and creativity of these designs make them the foundation of our collection. I'm going to talk first, as I mentioned, the first category is about storage, the non-glamorous part of our job. Here is an image of our store that contains 20th century fashion textiles and accessories. And I think the subject of storage is one of the most pressing issues relating to our fashion collection. Today, our storerooms are nearly full. There is no room. They're spread across 7 different rooms in 2 different locations, and they do not contain much space for study. There is no space for conservation within the store or for mounting objects onto mannequins within the store. This room holds about 25,000 objects. And here you see some rolling racking for rolled textiles, and on the left, some hanging storage. These photographs here are from our historic dress and textile storeroom. You can see it's very old-fashioned, and it's quite full as well. This storeroom holds 45,000 objects. This is our off-site store for carpets, which holds about 5,000 objects. And this storage area is in the Olympia area of London, this storage building. And a number of museums share rooms in this facility. In 2009, the museum began an investigation for storing our fashion and textile collection in a new purpose-built facility. We hope to realize this, this facility that's going to act as a renowned resource center for textiles and fashion and would make our collection available on demand to the public, to researchers, fashion students, and members of the creative industries. I hope that the next time we speak, we will have realized this project because it's only in the proposal stage. But even at this beginning point, the museum thought it essential for for a team to be built of conservators and curators to do the research for this proposal. So it was very much a united effort. And I thought I should also show you images of our textile conservation studio. Some of you may have been here. I know some of you have worked at the V&A. And you see it, the kind of bird's eye view from the top. And the objects on the left are costumes for an upcoming exhibition on Diaghilev. It was built 14 years ago. It's still a good, serviceable studio, and it's where all of the technical work is performed at the museum. I think at this point I should also say that although the textile conservators are responsible for restoring our objects, the V&A curators are equally responsible for their care and storage. As a curator, when I acquire an object, I must decide how and where to store it. Also, when objects are removed from the store for exhibition or loan, it is by curators. The movement of the objects is done by curators. But if there is a storage problem, for example, with climate, insect damage, or other, the course of action is decided by curators and conservators together. And here is some of the textile conservation staff and some conservators working on one of the Diaghilev costumes. When curators identify objects for an exhibition, these are objects they hope they can include. Often it's our conservators who advise us what is possible. Haute couture at the V&A, as part of the whole of our collection, is a relatively small percent. I would say less than 10% of our collection is haute couture. However, post-1950 haute couture is among the most active area of the collection in terms of exhibition loans, requests, and requests for study and appointments. In the financial year of 2008-09, over 3 million people visited V&A exhibitions either at our museum in London or across Britain or abroad. During this period, 25 V&A exhibitions toured to 46 venues in Britain and abroad, and many of these exhibitions contained objects of fashion and textiles, and these included the Art Deco exhibition, which started at the V&A in 2003, but then traveled across continents, finishing last year in Melbourne. And here are some examples from that exhibition. The show included a variety of decorative arts, but a very large portion of haute couture. Also, this exhibition, which was of high fashion, toured to the Kremlin in 2008-09. And here's an installation of couture from the 1930s that was in our show, Surreal Things. And here's a slide of the exhibition being packed for its tour. Of course, the work of researching, conserving, and mounting an exhibition usually doesn't end when the exhibition finishes at the V&A. And because we've developed these relationships with museums across the world, last year our exhibitions traveled to a really wide variety of cities that included Mumbai, Moscow, Melbourne, Paris, and Damascus. And our textile conservators work very hard to satisfy the demands of this busy exhibition and touring program. In this slide, you see images from our recent exhibition, The Golden Age of Couture, Paris and London, 1947 to 57. It showcased the post-war haute couture industry in Paris and the flourishing of the couture trade in London at that time. It was curated by my colleague, Claire Wilcox, and it toured to Australia, Canada, and the United States. And it featured over 120 haute couture gowns and suits, as well as accessories such as bags, hats, shoes, and underclothing. Among the objects in this exhibition was an outfit purchased specifically for the show. It was a version of Christian Dior's 1954 design Zamir. The story of this dress illustrates well the collaboration between the V&A's curators and conservators. Here you see a photograph of how it looked when it came into the museum. There will be some drama as the changes unfold. It presented difficult conservation challenges because when the dress came in, it was very dirty and soiled. It came in three separate pieces, jacket, skirt, and bodice. And we bought it knowing very little about it from an auction in Paris. In this photograph, you can see the name tape of the owner of the dress sewn into the lining. It was Agata Seckers, the wife of Mickey Seckers, who was a Hungarian-born textile manufacturer who started his company in 1938. Textile conservator Francis Hartog estimated two months of full-time work to restore the dress. But the problem was not the amount of work, but whether something could be done to save it. She suspected the dress wasn't silk, and after testing, realized that it was the man-made fiber acetate, cellulose acetate. And at that time, it was a difficult challenge because there wasn't much information about restoring this fabric from the 1950s. But it's interesting to note that Dior was commissioned to make the dress because the fabric was one of the Seckers line, and so it was a walking advertisement for the Seckers company. And also it's interesting to note that the original design board for Zamir showed this dress in a very pale gray satin trimmed with mink, so very different from this very bright fabric for Agata Seckers. Here is the jacket before and after conservation. And The cleaning process was very challenging because the lining was made of silk, the jacket and skirt were cellulose acetate, and these fabrics react differently to the same cleaning process. But our director said that the dress could be sacrificed if the conservation went wrong, which gave the conservator a boldness to proceed. After the conservation work began, the Secker's family heard about the discovery and sent us a swatch of the original fabric, and so we knew what color we should be working towards. And it was cleaned with a commercial solvent, or dissolvant, and the outer skirt emerged from the layer of brown dirt to the brightness of the original swatch. And another concern was that the skirt, it was unclear, because it had been so altered, it was unclear how the pleats were supposed to be fixed. There were 5 meters of fabric that had to be gathered into pleats to fit a waist of 69 centimeters. But Frances was allowed to take the skirt apart. She found the original dart marks, which helped her investigation. And because of existing photographs, she knew what she should be working towards. So to sum up the effort, our textile conservator assessed the object, identified the work needed, performed the conservation work, which included cleaning and color fastness testing. Results are shown here in this image. And she also modified an existing mannequin. This is always, as you know, a very intricate, careful part of making the dress look good on display. It's what goes on underneath. And so she worked very hard also making underpinnings. And here Frances is sewing the petticoat for the skirt. And here is the final product and the dress on display in the gallery with the Dior original design board and the Secker's original color swatch. And since this is a traveling exhibition, the conservators also made protective covers and cushions for travel, and they advised the packers what type of crate and interior was needed. And Frances Hartog is currently in Quebec this week, probably installing Zemir today as we speak at the exhibition there. I would like to say that if anyone's interested in more detailed information about this project, I have brought Frances's article for the V&A Textile Conservation Journal. I have copies, so come and find me afterwards, and I'd be happy to give it to you. And here's a photograph of the conservators celebrating at the opening party of Couture. You can see why they're so happy after so much hard work. The next section I'm going to talk a bit about is our loan program at the V&A, which, as I mentioned, there's increasingly a large number of loan requests for haute couture designs. An example is this Norman Hartnell evening dress for Queen Elizabeth II. Lavish gold and white beadwork encrusts this dress that she wore for her state visit to France in 1957. It was worn on her first night out on Monday, the 8th of April, to a dinner hosted by President René Coty at the Élysée Palace. And you can see that the jewel-like details include motifs of daisies, crossed wheat sheaves, and Napoleonic bees. So the dress was designed to both complement the French nation and draw attention to the Queen. And this dress has been loaned out twice in the last 5 years, and was on display at the V&A in 2007. So it's had a very busy life over the last few years. Another loan was this Yves Saint Laurent dress for Dior from 1960, which went to the Museum of Fashion in Bath for its exhibition on floral dresses called Pick of the Bunch. And also this English court dress was recently loaned to the Palace of Versailles for their exhibition, Faste du Cour et Cérémonie Royale. And on the right is a photograph of the installation. Another loan was this Balenciaga, which came to the Musée de la Mode as part of their important exhibition on that designer in 2006. And for such loans, I think, again, I'd like to point out that we, the conservators and curators, work together to consider requests for loan. And we think about things like the condition of the garment, previous display history, and display and security conditions at the borrowing venue. So it's very much a team conversation. Conservators and curators alike often serve as couriers to the borrowing venue and help oversee the installation and deinstallation. The last section of my talk is about acquisitions. And as I mentioned earlier, we're very committed to acquiring examples of what we consider to be leading design. And that can be couture, but it can also be other aspects of fashion production. As a curator, I really do rely on the advice and expertise of my conservator colleagues when considering potential acquisitions. And I wanted to show you a couple of examples of things within the last year that we have talked about as a team. This is a cape by Pierre Cardin from about 1965 that was recently sold at auction. And we were considering buying it. It's an innovative design, very sculptural, and its bright red color would look fantastic on display. So I went to view the dress with a science conservator, and we looked at it together and determined that the lining was possibly a later addition, and some of the stitching looked wrong. And as you know, PVC is a material that's very problematic, so its future was in question. With all these things, these pieces of information, we then decided not to acquire this example. Another very difficult decision was this haute couture wedding dress, 1964, by Yves Saint Laurent for a Swiss bride. It was offered to us as a gift with the headdress, the original sketch, and photographs of the bride and the bridal party. All of the designs are by Yves Saint Laurent in this photograph. So it seemed the perfect gift. But upon examination with a textile conservator, I found that the dress had very tiny little slits in the fabric, which we analyzed and found it was silk, but there was something about the weave that had weakened it, and so its future was problematic. So this very difficult decision was taken not to acquire the dress, and the input from my textile conservator colleagues was essential to make this decision. Last month, also another acquisition decision was recently we acquired a group of 20th century haute couture, possibly one of the most important examples of 1930s couture in our collection. It came from an export stop decision that the V&A was asked to advise on. It was a group of material, of a wardrobe, worn by Lady Foley, the wife of Baron Foley, now deceased. After successfully securing the export stop of 11 Madeleine Vionnet dresses worn by Lady Foley, the V&A worked with two other museums, the Fashion Museum in Bath and the Bowes Museum in County Durham, to try to secure these dresses for the nation. Across the three museums, we secured 9 of the Vionnet designs. And along the way, we received advice from our textile conservation department regarding the condition, mounting, and exhibition of this material. Because this is such an important acquisition of haute couture and exemplifies the types of objects we collect, I will highlight this as a kind of case study. Lady Foley, seen here in these photographs, along with her husband and son, purchased these dresses designed by Vionnet between 1929 and 1938. Lady Foley was born Minoru Greenstone, the daughter of Harry Greenstone of Johannesburg, South Africa. In 1922, she married the 7th Baron Foley, whose dates are 1895 to 1927, and he was a former flight lieutenant in the Royal Air Force who became Baron in 1918. Their son was born in 1923. Minoru Foley's marriage introduced her to British society. During the early to mid-1920s, the couple is listed in the Times Social Register as traveling frequently to Paris, and Lady Foley was among the few women of privilege who could afford the finest quality textiles, meticulously crafted designs, and highly personal attention offered by couture houses such as Vionnet's. After her husband's death in 1927, Lady Foley's grief was not so overwhelming that it prevented her from shopping, because the first Vionnet purchase she is known to have made was the next year, in 1928. And subsequently, she's listed in the Times Social Register as traveling very frequently to Paris in April, May, July, and September of 1930, May of 31, and April of 33. And the Hotel Maurice, where she stayed, was not far from Vionnet's premises on the Avenue Montaigne. British Vogue, articulating Vionnet's appeal, declared in 1925, quote, "The genius of Vionnet is expressed in the complicated cut of her gowns and the simplicity of their lines," proclaiming her perhaps the greatest geometrician among all French couturiers. As Betty Kirk has pointed out, Vionnet did have several important British clients, such as Lady Davis, and Grace Marchioness Curzon of Kettleston was also a client. Yet British women, on the whole, were, even those that shopped in Paris, were not enthusiastic clients of Vionnet's. Perhaps because Vionnet's designs are too chic for the practical British and too delicate for their very difficult climate. So while there are some very good Vionnet's in British collections, on the whole, Britain doesn't contain very many of them. The quality and variety of Lady Foley's Vionnet's, like the smocked tulle design from 1934 seen here and the embroidered organdy gown of 1938, these both went to the Fashion Museum in Bath. So the quality of this group makes it the best example of a provenanced Vionnet wardrobe in Britain. These also include a variety of textiles from printed silk to lace and embroidered tulle. These three examples are now in the Beaux Museum. These dresses are of particular importance because of the masterful quality of their workmanship and because, as a group, they show the impressive range of Vionnet's technical skill and manipulation of textiles from across a decade. And, for example, this detail of an applied swallow, stylized swallow motif of velvet on tulle, and this layered lace gown, and this printed silk chiffon afternoon dress. All those last four are at the V&A's collection. So I've just shown you quickly the kind of range of the nine dresses that have now come to Britain. This acquisition was truly a team effort. It took the expertise of curators, conservators, photographers, fundraisers, and others from three different museums to succeed. Our success must also be partially due to the beautiful, well-presented Madeleine Vionnet exhibition at the Musée de la Mode. I would like to thank the Musée de la Mode for this eye-opening show, for it helped to justify the V&A's position and our central argument for acquiring Lady Foley's dresses, that the designs of Madeleine Vionnet are centrally important to the story of haute couture, and that Vionnet was truly one of the 20th century's most important creators of haute couture design. Thank you very much.